This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We're broadcasting on over 500 stations around the country, on Pacific and NPR stations, low-power FM, college and community radio stations, on both TV satellite networks, Dish Network Channel 9415 Free Speech TV, 9410 Link TV, on DirecTV Channel 375 Link TV. And we're also broadcasting on public access TV stations and PBS TV stations, and our headlines are available in Spanish at our website, democracynow.org. There they are in audio and transcript form for any radio station to take, as over 100 are around the world. We're talking to John Perkins. His second book on the issue of economic hitmen is called The Secret History of the American Empire. John Perkins is a New York Times best-selling author. His book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, took this country by storm. So you quit, but that was one step. Writing about it was another. Talk about your attempts over time.
Oh, yes. It's after I quit, I tried several times to write the book that became Confessions of an Economic Hitman. And each time I reached out to other economic hitmen I'd worked with or jackals to try to get their stories. The word got out and I was threatened. I had a young daughter at the time. She's now 25. And I also was offered some bribes. In fact, I accepted a bribe of about $500,000. And it's what's called a legal bribe, but it's a bribe, and it was given to me with the condition that I not write the book. There was no question about that. I describe it in detail, and I assuaged my guilt by putting a lot of that money to nonprofits I had formed, Dream Change and Pachamama Alliance, that are helping Amazonian people fight oil companies. So it assuaged my guilt some, but I didn't write the story, and this happened a number of times. And I would find one excuse or another, and I wrote other books about indigenous people. I worked with these people. I wrote the books you mentioned earlier about shamanism and so forth. So I kind of, you know, distracted myself and assuaged my guilt and went on with this. And then on 9/11, I was in the Amazon with the Shuar people. I'd taken a group of nonprofit people in to learn from indigenous people in the Amazon. But shortly after that, I came up to New York, to Ground Zero. And as I stood there looking down into that terrible pit that's smoldering and it still smelled of burning flesh, I realized that I had to write the book. I could no longer defer, that the American people had no understanding of why so many people around the world are angry and frustrated and terrified, and that I had to take responsibility for what happened at 9/11. And in fact, we all have to take a certain responsibility, which is not in any way to condone mass murder by anybody ever. I'm not condoning that in any way. But I did realize that the American people needed to understand why there's so much anger around the world. I had to write the book. So this time, I didn't tell anyone I was writing, and even my wife and daughter, they knew I was writing something, but they didn't know what. I didn't reach out to other people. It made it a little more difficult to write it. But finally, I got it in the hands of a very good New York agent, and he sent it out to publishers. At that point, this manuscript becomes my best insurance policy, because at that point, if something strange happens to me, including now, suddenly the book will sell, even though it's been a bestseller for a long time, it'll sell a lot more copies if something happens. People sometimes laugh and say, do you worry that your publisher may be trying to assassinate you? Because it would certainly help book sales. I don't worry about it. But, you know, so at that point, once I got the manuscript there, it became my insurance policy.
You write, A Jackal is Born, about Jack Corbin. Who is he?
Well, Jack Corbin, and that's not his real name, but he's a real person. He's alive and well today, working for us in Iraq. But he is a jackal. He's an assassin. And one of the most fascinating stories, I think, it involves the Seychelles, which is a small country, an island country off the coast of Africa. And it happens to be located where Diego Garcia, one of the United States' most strategic air bases, is located. And there's a long history behind Diego Garcia. But in the late 70s, Seychelles had a president that was very friendly to us, James Manchin, and he was overthrown in a bloodless coup by Francis René, a socialist. And Francis René threatened to get us out of Diego Garcia. to expose the real facts behind the terrible things that went on to put us in Diego Garcia, and it's a lot of details that I won't get into now. In any case, I was called down to Washington to meet with a bunch of retired generals and admirals who were trying to who were all working for as economic hitmen for consulting firms, and they were prepping me to go in and corrupt Francis René and bring him around to our side. But before doing that, they wanted to find out whether he was really corruptible or not. And it was sort of interesting that they, one of these generals had a young protege, a young man, who, and the general had noticed that a high diplomat from Seychelles in Washington had a young wife who was not very happy. So this young man was sent in to seduce the wife and compromise her and get information from her, which is a fairly common tactic. Sex is a big thing in this game of diplomacy and economic hit people. And it's sort of an interesting by story here is that one time at lunch, this general came back and he said, you know, I think you economic hitmen have a much tougher job than your women counterpart, because he said, now this woman, the diplomat's wife, is buying into this with the young man, but she wants to be convinced that he loves her. He said, you know, my God, you know, I'd give the keys to the Pentagon to a young lady just for some good sex. I don't need to be convinced that she loves me, but I guess that's the difference between men and women. That's what he said. Kind of interesting. Anyway, in the end, the young man did get the information from the wife, and the information was that Francis René was not corruptible. There was no point in even trying.
Also, Diego Garcia is very significant as a military base.
Extremely significant, and it's being used in Afghanistan and Iraq and sorties that we fly in from to Africa or any part of that part of the world. In any case, I was called off the job, and a little while later, a team of assassins was sent in from South Africa, 46, I can't remember the exact number, were sent in as a rugby team to bring in Christmas gifts to the children of the Seychelles. But their real job was to overthrow the government and assassinate René. At the time, I didn't know these individuals. Now I know Jack Corbin. I know him very well personally. I've met him since. Our paths crossed back then, but we didn't know each other.
What exactly did he do?
Well, the team went in, and they were apprehended at the airport. A security guard discovered a hidden weapon on one of them. A huge gun battle broke out at the Mahi airport, and these mercenaries were surrounded by perhaps 1,000 soldiers on the outside. Jack told me it was one of the few times in his life where he figured he was going to die and had time to think about it. Many times he could have died, but he just reacted quickly, and they didn't know what to do. But eventually an Air India 707 came into view and asked permission to land, and they gave it permission to land. As soon as it landed, they hijacked it, and they flew it back to Durban, South Africa. And I'm now watching this on the national news. This is now on U.S. national news, and I'm knowing that I didn't know what was going to happen when I was called off the case, but now I'm seeing it unfold. And to the world, what we saw is this plane, Air India 707, flies into Durban, South Africa, surrounded by South African security guards. The men on the plane give themselves up. They're marched off. They're sent to court, and then sentenced to prison and some like that execution. And that's the end of the story, as far as we know. Now that I know Jack, what actually happened was when the plane was surrounded, the security forces got on the telephone with the plane and discovered that it was their good friends, their teachers, in fact, on the plane. They worked out a deal. The men gave themselves up. They did spend 3 months in prison. They had their own wing with television, et cetera, and then were quietly released after 3 months. A lot of those same men, that team, a lot of them today are in Iraq working for us there, doing things that you know, our soldiers are forbidden from doing, and they're making very good money doing it.
Who is this man, so-called Jack Corbin, working for today in Iraq?